Welcome back to Radio Veritas. Changing gear, it's exactly 5 in the afternoon, Thursday. Archbishop Slattery with you. Thank you very much for staying with me. I'm just going to reflect for the next few minutes about last Sunday's Gospel, because it is dealing with one of the great themes for Lent. Not the only theme, but one of the great themes of Lent. That is about temptation and sin. You'll remember last Sunday's Gospel, how Jesus was taken to the desert, and there he was tempted to turn bread into stones, and to jump down from the temple so that God would give him a safe landing, and that if he worshipped Satan, he would become the prince of the whole world. Now, these temptations, everybody is tempted all our lives. And in fact, you know, this story of the temptation of Jesus is a story with enormous significance. Jesus, in fact, was not only tempted once, just in the desert at the beginning. Yes, he was. But he was tempted right through his life. Do you remember when he told Peter he was going up to die in Jerusalem? Peter says, "That cannot happen to you. No, no, no." Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan." He was tempted again there. He was tempted in Gethsemane by terrible fear to turn from his Father's will. He was tempted on the cross. Remember, just like Satan, the high priest said to him, "If you are the Son of God, now come down from the cross." So temptation was right through the life of Jesus, and it is right through our life. Secondly, these temptations of Jesus, it didn't mean that Satan and Jesus went off for a walk together to some high mountain. It means these temptations took place within the soul and mind, imagination and heart of Jesus, with his encounter with the world beyond. So there's another lesson. Temptation generally comes from within. You know, we're always worried about Satan jumping down on us from the roof or something. But actually, Satan works from within. Life works from within. And Satan also tries to work from within. Now, the third thing I want to say is that the temptations of Jesus are absolutely universal. Okay, I agree. You have not been tempted to turn stones into bread. Okay, we have not been. But how can I say, therefore, that I have suffered this temptation? Well, what Satan is really saying to Jesus is, look, you're a man of unique presence, of unique powers, of unique attraction. Turn stones into bread so that you should become popular. So that you should become popular. How many of us sell our souls for celebrity in order to become popular, in order to become the hearer of the crowd? And you know, this is all over the place. You know, we are selfish. You know, when we gossip, we always put ourselves on the good side and everybody else on the bad side. We think the world circulates around ourselves. All these are signs that this temptation of Jesus, we know it very well. You know, a negative signs of it is, you know, if someone corrects you and you get so angry. If someone finds fault with you or doesn't praise you or doesn't promise you or doesn't take you sincerely enough, then there is great anger, great envy and great jealousy. That is the same temptation as Jesus. And we all know these temptations, you know. And in a way, like we're always sugar-coating our sins and our temptations. You know, you may go home today from work and find that someone has broken into your house and has stolen, you know, your laptop, your television set, and anything that was of value in the house. Now, today, people don't speak about to steal. To steal, no one steals today. That's politically incorrect. They don't steal today. People just lift things. They just lift things. You know the way we're trying to make stealing, which we know to be bad. No, we don't want to say, "I did that." No, we just lifted something. People don't commit adultery today. Adultery which destroys families and destroys children and wives and husbands. And they don't commit adultery today. People today play around. They're like going to the FNB or to Loftus Versfeld. They are playing around, but it's adultery. And no matter what name we call it, it's a serious sin. People don't tell lies anymore. No, they have alternative facts. People don't kill the child in the womb, they just terminate pregnancies. And so it goes on. So all these temptations to make yourself the number one, to downplay your sinfulness, and to place yourself falsely at the centre of everybody's attention. Yes, you're being tempted to turn the stones into bread. The second temptation was throw yourself down from the top of the temple and God will help you to land. You will not be injured whatsoever, Satan said, quoting Deuteronomy to Jesus. And you know how Jesus rejected Satan. Now, are you tempted to jump down from the top of the church on a Sunday morning and show people how holy you are? Maybe you're not, but we are tempted to show how holy we are. And you know, this is all under the heading of this sin are all sins of hypocrisy. And remember, these are the sins of religious people, often so-called good people. And you know, remember, it was good, in inverted commas, religious people who crucified Jesus, the Son of God. They crucified him because he didn't wash his hands. And that was part of the religion of the time. Because he cured poor people, suffering people, dying people on the Sabbath day. They killed him because of that. When he did miracles, you know, curing the blind man, the woman who was sick for 12, another woman 38 years, they said his miracles were the work of Satan. They said he ate with sinners. He was always sitting at the table with tax collectors like Matthew and sinners. That he ate with prostitutes and tax collectors. And so when he was dying, as I said, they shouted at the cross, "If you are the Son of God." These were religious people who did all these things. So if we're filled with our own important self-importance, you know, then we are being tempted really to throw ourselves down from the top of the temple and show people how holy we are, when in fact we know that, when in fact the reality is we are sinners. So I will ask you in turn, ask yourselves, is your worship, your singing, your praise, is it making you more merciful? Is it making you more merciful? Or what is happening when you go to church? Finally, the temptation of Jesus was, you know, Satan said, "I will make you master of the world if you fall down and worship me." He showed him all the kingdoms of the world. Of course, Satan is a liar. And again, you know, people often have great envy of very rich people. But some of those very rich people are drug dealers who are destroying the lives of young people. They're dishonest, they're cheating, they're involved in corruption and all these things. Satan can never make you happy. Satan is the most miserable creature in existence. So for that liar to promise you wealth and riches and no suffering in this world, and people feel like that if they're successful, that they are the friends of God. No. Witchcraft, for example, so many people are involved in this in order to become, in order to get certain powers. No, but I really want to say here, under this title, we really have to examine our consciences about what sin really is. You know, people, when they talk about sin, they think about simple private sin like, "I forgot to say my prayers," or "I was impatient," or "I forgot to do something," or I got distracted at prayer. Yeah, okay. But these are not really at the heart of sin. But when you see, and I have seen these as factual situations, you know, let's say medical personnel on duty at night and absolutely abandoning patients to suffer and even to die because they failed to tend to them. When you see, like I saw it myself thousands of times working in rural areas, poor people spending their last rands in order to come and make application for pensions or social grants, and clerks writing it down and just throwing the application then on the floor. 2 years later, the application is still on the floor. When you see, these are grave things. When you see children failing badly in their matric, poor children who have no other hope, they're failing because teachers have not turned up. Of course, it goes on to lawyers and policemen. It goes on to priests, it goes on to teachers, it goes on to everybody. We really have to examine ourselves and really Lent is a time to begin to realize that we have a conscience and that no one gets away with anything. Yes, of course, there are people who become very rich and are totally corrupt and they're living happily lives and they will never be in jail or no one will ever know. But you have not escaped. That has been seen by God. God is waiting for you. So let us examine our conscience and listen to the voice of God who says you must do good and you must avoid evil. So the X-ray eyes of Jesus are looking into our hearts this Lent, and let us respond. Let us listen now to the next hymn, Gipe Baba Udondo. Welcome back. You're with Changing Gear, Radio Veritas, Good News. Archbishop Slattery with you. Thank you for being with me. I really am delighted with your company. Here at the studio, I just see this great producer across from me. The microphone is in front of me and I'm sort of half looking out through the window and I don't see anybody else. So thank you very much for spending some time with me in this afternoon. Now, I'm going to speak a little bit about, we're moving through the Pope's, Pope Francis's letter on family and marriage, Amoris Laetitia, and I'm at chapter 4. And he's speaking about basically love in marriage. Now, what I'm going to say and what the Pope says here, but he really is very realistic too. He's going to put the ideals in front of you, what we should strive for. But of course, we know we fail many times. Everybody knows that. We all fail many times. But however, we must have an ideal, a goal to aim at. So the Pope says in chapter 4 of his letter, The Joy of the Gospel, he really begins by giving us the first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 13, you know, and I'm going to read a few verses of that because the Pope begins the chapter by giving a commentary, you know, about what love really is. And he is quoting St. Paul, 1 Corinthians 13. Paul says, because marriage is based on true love, isn't that right? So the Pope is trying to bring out what true love involves. Well, St. Paul says, love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. So the Pope begins there, realizing that, you know, this is the ideals of what love really involves. And it comes from Scripture, from St. Paul, 1 Corinthians 13. Now, the Pope simply wishes to encourage and gives points which will enrich married love. And he's telling us you cannot take your husband or your wife for granted. Love has to be nourished. We have to work on it. And there is a lot of failure. Everybody knows that in all marriages. But also there is a wonderful joy when we sacrifice and really make the effort to really love for each other. The Pope says, as I say, patience, that means understanding others, really realizing that all have limitations. Be slow to anger, he says. Accept the other. He's not saying that, you know, by accepting the others that you must accept all kinds of abuse and mistreatment. No, no, no. You must stand up for yourself, not allow people to use you, but to be patient and to be understanding. He says, don't be jealous, quoting St. Paul. That is, learn to affirm and to praise other people, to acknowledge other people. There is a wife working so hard for the family. Does the family ever acknowledge that? Or there is a man out every day caring for his family, coming back a faithful and wonderful father. Is he ever told that? Do the husband and wife ever tell each other that? Recognize the gifts of others, the Pope is saying. Again, he says, again from St. Paul, don't be boastful. That is, don't be haughty, looking down or pushy. Not always clinging to the centre of attention, not being arrogant. Humility is crucial in married life, to be humble. You are wrong many times. Again, the Pope says, quoting St. Paul, don't be rude. That is, don't be harsh. Have courtesy. Listen to the other person. Again, he says, be generous. You know, love, in other words, be generous to the person who really loves you and has dedicated his or her life. We all need to love and to be loved. And we're in marriage to love and be loved. And let us seek to offer that to the other person. Again, Paul says, don't be irritable. That is, don't have this interior hostility, this cold anger in our heart. That destroys married love. He quotes Ephesians chapter 4, do not let the sun go down on your anger. Do some little thing to make up maybe the harsh words or the words that are the unkindness of the day. A little something, a gesture, a caress, even words the Pope said are not necessary. Some little sign that you acknowledge the other person. Paul also says love forgives. The Pope explains that not every problem is equally serious. Vengeance has no place in marriage. A spirit of sacrifice is necessary. And then he concludes by saying, married love is a question of growing into married love. Married love can't be taken for granted. It must be nourished, cared for. And the Pope says, if we are people of faith, that is, people who are continually meeting the Lord in his word, meeting the Lord in the sacraments, receiving Jesus, if we believe that he is living within us, then, you know, we will draw strength to be like Jesus, to have compassion, to have mercy, which are so necessary in a marriage. And the Pope then gives certain steps to grow in that love. You know, he says, like, appreciate the others, dialogue with the others, be open to the others. I remember a little child one time, already just 5 years of age, and its various members of his body began to fail. His leg, his other leg, his knees, he couldn't walk anymore. Then its arms, gradually the whole body of the child began to fail. And the mother was out of her mind trying to care for her child. But the little child used to look at its mother with love and says, don't worry, mother, even though everything is failing, I still have a heart to love you. And so let us somehow find the sparks of love to open up to the others. Make time to be with each other, the Pope says, husband and wife. Are you ever alone together? Are you ever enjoy something together or go out together? Reciprocity. Both must play a part. I remember a joke of a man who says, you know, I have a great understanding with my wife. And the understanding is I never speak to her and she never speaks to me. Now, that's not what you would call a great reciprocity or a great understanding. But we do have to both make the sacrifice to reach each other. Intimacy must be there. And intimacy, the Pope says, involves sharing, accepting weakness and being warm to the others. The Pope then gives us, three beautiful words which are part of marriage. He says, the first word is please. Approach each other with that attitude, please. The second word that makes marriage happy, the Pope says, is thank you. Thank you. If we often say that, really of appreciation, that will enrich our marriage. And the final word is sorry, because we all fail. So love then, the Pope says, is very practical. It's concerned with little things, contrary things, like love for Jesus. Now, I just quote a few words here from the Pope, bringing out, because, you know, this whole area of sexuality in the Catholic Church has often been shrouded with negativity. But the Pope says sex is not a negative thing. It's a great gift from God. I'm quoting the Pope. This is what he says. All this brings us to the sexual dimension of marriage. It's article number 150 in Amoris Laetitia. God himself created sexuality, which is a marvellous gift to his creatures. The Catholic Church has always taught that. that God himself created sexuality. It is a marvelous gift to his creatures. If this gift needs to be cultivated and directed, it is not to prevent the impoverishment of an authentic value. St. Pope John Paul II rejected the claim that the Church's teaching is a negation, a saying no to the value of human sexuality, or that the Church simply tolerates sexuality for procreation. Not at all. Sexual desire is not something to be looked down upon, and there can be no attempt whatsoever to call into question its necessity. So sexuality is totally good. It's a gift of God, and the Church sees it in a very positive of light. He goes on, sexuality is not a means of gratification or entertainment simply. It is an interpersonal language within the other, wherein the other is taken seriously in his or her sacred and inviolable dignity. This is where infidelity in marriage impoverishes, makes poor the possibility for genuine sexual love and passion and feeling for each other. Because if we're unfaithful, we're unable to give ourselves totally and honestly to the other person. So it goes on, as such, the human heart comes to participate, so to speak, in another kind of spontaneity in sexuality. Now, he goes on, in no way then can we consider the erotic, that's the sexual dimension of love, simply as a permissible evil or a burden to be tolerated for the good of the family. Rather, sex, it must be seen as a gift from God that enriches the relationship of the spouses, as a passion sublimated by a love respectful of the dignity of the others. It becomes a pure, unadulterated affirmation, a yes to the other, revealing the marvels of which the human heart is capable. In this way, even momentarily, we can feel that life has turned out good and happy. So sexuality is a beautiful gift from God. Let us go on now and listen to the next hymn, I Could Sing of Your Love Forever.